changed a lot. First of all, I never learned windsurfing because I was reading and reading this paper again and again. And secondly, on my entire life. Actually, I met Abner, I had a chance to meet him in person a few years later, about 25 years ago now, while I was a postdoc in Rochester, New York. And I told him, I want to work on foundations. And Abner said, no, no, you have a family, you should have a decent job. But Abner, being very positive, he continued saying, you should go into optics. You can make your living out of optics while keeping alive your interest for the foundations. And this is really exactly what I did, actually. And for that reason, to respect Abner's nice advice, I will not deliver one talk today, but two talks. First one on the more applied side, although quantum teleportation is not really applied, and the second one more on the foundations. So let's start with the first one, the one on teleportation. I guess you all know the story about teleportation. We start by preparing some entangled state. We distribute that between a transmitter and a receiver in order to establish this quantum teleportation channel. Then we come with the quantum states to be teleported, and we exploit entanglement a second time by making this Bell state measurement, which is really asking the two systems, A and B, a question about their relation. Not a question to A or a question to B, but a question about their relation. And this is typically also something which is impossible classically to ask these kind of questions, to get an answer only about the relationship without getting an answer about the individual states. And once we have these results, we communicate the results and apply this unitary transformation. So in order to do that in real life, we want to use optical fibers. And then we now have to face two problems. One is loss, the other one is decoherence. In order to minimize the losses, we'll work at the wavelengths where the losses are minimum, 1.3 micron and 1.55 microns. And in order to minimize decoherence, which in this case is mainly polarization mode dispersion, we don't coat the qubits in polarization, but in time bits. And let me just briefly remind you how that goes. The idea is that if you have a single photon here, you may let it pass one of these very imbalanced interferometer with a short arm and a long arm in such a way that the photon comes out in a superposition of passing the short arm, so an early time bin corresponding to the logical value zero, and a delayed time bin corresponding to this logical value one. And the coefficients of this qubit, the C0 and C1, can be adjusted with this variable coupler, while the phase here can be adjusted with a phase modulator in this interferometer. So you can prepare any possible qubit state in this way, and you can also easily imagine how to go to larger dimensions. Interesting is that you can also perform any possible projective measurements with a very similar interferometer, with a switch here delaying the early time being, letting the second timing going straight so that we're going to interfere here. And by adjusting the coupling here and the phase, you can perform any Feynman measurement. Once you have that, you can also go to time bin entanglements. You have a laser pulse. You let that pass through this imbalanced interferometer. And now you have to think of these two pulses, bright pulses, of being constituted of many photons, Poisson distribution photon number. And each photon is actually in a superposition of the early time bin and the delay time bin. Now, if you use one of these parametric down conversion, you will get photon pairs with energy and momentum conservation. And if the crystal is properly cut, you may adjust such a way that you get one photon at this telecom wavelength and the second photon at the other telecom wavelength, in such a way that you can then, with a WDM, a wavelength division multiplexing coupler, deterministically separate them, although you use a collinear configuration, which makes alignments much more simple. And then you have these two pairs now of this one pair of photon, which are both in the early time bin, the 001, superposed with both in the delayed time bin, the 11, and so you can produce any entangled to qubit states in this Schmidt decomposition basis. Now, for the analysis, you use again, as I said, these interferometers, and you understand that there will be interference between short path on the pump side and delayed here, which is going to interfere with the following possibility: delayed on the pump and straight on the analyzer. And since these two paths are indistinguishable, we'll get interferences, for instance, here after 2 × 25 km, so 50 km in total, you still get fringe visibilities clear enough that you can violate Bell inequality without subtracting any dark counts. Okay, now if we want to do teleportation, we'll put the sender somewhere. This is actually our lab in Geneva. And in this case, we use the Swisscom station, which is somewhere downtown. Distance was 800 meters. And the way to really do it is to first prepare the EPR state, the entangled state. Then one of the photons will send to the Swisscom station, and the other one we keep in a quantum memory. Later, once the photon is really under its way to the Swisscom station, we prepare the qubit. Then this qubit, together with the photon which is released from the quantum memory, undergoes this Bell state measurement, actually a partial Bell state measurement. And then we get the result of these Bell state measurements to be sent to the receiver. At the receiver side, of course, the photon from the entangled EPR pair will arrive first, so we'll put it into a quantum memory, waiting for the results to arrive, and then we do the analysis. So in somewhat more details, the way it goes is the following. The EPR source is done, as I explained before, by a laser pulse. One of these imbalanced interferometer, here it's Michelson configuration, so you recognize the long arm and the short arm. Then this nonlinear crystal, LBO, the WDM to separate a 1.3 in this memory and the 1.55 going to the Swisscom station. Actually, this quantum memory is the best quantum memory existing today, which is a rudimentary one, which simply consists of a fiber spool, so a coil. So it simply waits, the photon simply stays in the coil for some time, microseconds here. Now we use the same laser, but a different pulse, to prepare our qubit. And for that, we again use the same, similar nonlinear crystal, but it's a different crystal, so a different pulse, as I said. And then we prepare the qubit to be teleported. We perform this partial Bell state measurement, send the result on the other side. During that time, this photon was waiting in this fiber coil. Then the analysis. And actually, we did just one more thing here. This photon here, which is in principle not useful, we'll use it as a trigger so that this altogether acts like a heralded single photon. So we have really a single photon source on this side that is teleported to the other side, and we get these kind of results with a fidelity of 93%. Okay, very nice. Teleportation is fascinating. But now if you think really in terms of applied physics, this is much too complicated using today's technology. So what we're going to do is to simplify it a lot and a lot. I'm not going to go into all the details, but for instance, one kind of straightforward simplification is not to teleport a message, but to teleport noise. And if you teleport noise, it may look stupid, but at the end, you will have a common secret on both ends. And that's exactly the idea of quantum cryptography, to end up with a common secret on both sides. And if you do that long enough, you get these kind of devices. So this is now the box that ID Quantique is commercializing in Geneva. The QKD functions, the quantum key distribution at 5 MHz. Encryption actually runs faster at 100 megahertz, so it is not one-time pad, but I mean, we use the same key a few times, as you can easily compute here. One important thing in all these devices, quantum cryptographic devices, are random numbers, and we should, of course, use quantum random numbers, not pseudo-random numbers. And here you see, for instance, a device which I find very fascinating. This is a PC board. This is 4 × 5 cm, and in that you have a laser source, a beam splitter, and 2 photon counters, so that you can really produce random numbers for each module at 4 megabits per second. And you can have, as shown here, 4 of these modules on a single PC card, so up to 16 megabits per second in your PC. Okay, one more word before coming to the second part, the more fundamental part. Another experiment, which I think is quite interesting and, well, can be analyzed in different ways, is the following. We again have this entangled photon source. We again see here the analyzer with the short arms and the long arms. But what we add in this case are plasmon waveguides. So we have 2 plasmon waveguides. So with plasmon guides, thin gold strips, very thin, 20 nanometer thick. And so when the photon comes here, it triggers a plasmon, so kind of wave of electrons on the metal surface, and this wave of electrons propagates over this 1 centimeter, and at the end is again converted to a photon. Actually, there are some losses, there's about 5 dB losses altogether, but for the photons that make it all the way through it, we still get very clear interference, so 2-photon interference fringes, which shows 2 things. First of all, it showed that at some point we had the entanglement carried by plasmons. Plasmons involving something like 10 to the 9 electrons. It is a large number, but should also say that these plasmon code for 1 single quanta, so it's not really a Schrodinger cat. But there's another aspect of that. This is 1 centimeter long. Actually, this drawing is not on scale. The difference between long and short is typically of 20 centimeters, so longer than the plasmon guide here. And actually, we purposely made that even longer, up to kilometers. And then we have the following nice feature. This plasmon starts here, lives for a while, about 50 picoseconds, and dies here. But now it exists in superposition of now and later. Now, if you translate that in Schrodinger cat's language, that would be like a Schrodinger cat, which is in a superposition of living at 2 epochs that differ by much more than a cat's lifetime. So it's a superposition principle, but now applied in time instead of the usual in-space situation. Okay, so now I come to the second talk. Abner, I was saying at the beginning that I want to give 2 talks in order to respect your advice to have a decent job while keeping the interest for the foundations. So this here is the idea of going from Bell inequality to secure key distribution. And for that, I will start by revisiting basic quantum key distribution. So in basic quantum key distribution, we have these 2 friends, Alice and Bob, and they are in some offices. And of course, it is important, it's a basic of cryptography, that their offices are private. Of course, if everybody can just look through the window onto their computer screen, there is no privacy and there will never be any cryptographic system. So we have to assume that they are really inside some private place. And inside, they have a device. And this device is a box which has a knob, and the knob has 2 positions, 0 and 1, at least 2. It could have more, but let's keep it simple. So 2 positions, the 0 and the 1. But it starts in a neutral position. So actually, there are 3 positions. The 3rd one is just the neutral position, as it is shown presently here. Now, in order to start something, a key distribution, for instance, we need to let something enter or come out of the offices. So we have to open a window and to let something fly in or fly out. Typically, photons will come in and out at some point. But during that time, the position of the knobs is still in the neutral setting. Then they close again, and they should be private. And at the time they are private again, then only then they make a decision which position for the knob, so which input into their box, input 0 or input 1. And independently, Bob also makes one of these decisions. Of course, ideally, they use the ED-Conti random number generator. Then the box is going to provide them with some outputs, some measurement results. A for Alice and B for Bob. They repeat that procedure very often until they have good statistics. And once they have good enough statistics, they communicate publicly a sample of their data in such a way that they can estimate the probability of getting the results A and B given the inputs X and Y. And actually, I would even claim that in science, we never have direct access to anything except these kind of conditional probabilities, possibly with more parties or single parties. But all what we ever measure are frequencies of getting results under certain experimental conditions. Now, if we think now about this, so we have here these conditional probabilities, probability of getting these outputs for these inputs. And if we think in terms of the BB84, the well-known quantum cryptographic protocol, the usual story goes as follows. Whenever we have that the probability that the outputs are equal for given identical inputs, so same basis, same outputs, so probability is almost one. However, for the case when the inputs, the base choices are different, all four possible combinations of outputs are all equally probable, one quarter for each of the four possibilities. Then the story goes that if E is only limited by quantum mechanics, then we can distill out of this correlation a secure key. But this is actually not correct. And it's very clear that this is not correct because we can easily devise a counterexample. For instance, let's suppose that Alice and Bob did not receive one qubit, but received two qubits. Two qubits in these states, there is a mixture between correlated, perfectly correlated qubit values in the Z basis, and the second qubit is perfectly correlated again, this mixed state, but now in the X basis. And now whenever the bottom of your device is on the position zero, which you believe corresponds to a Z measurement, it's actually measuring the first qubit. And whenever this bottom is on the position one, which you believe corresponds to the X measurement, actually we are measuring, Alice and Bob are measuring the second qubit. In this case, we'll get, Alice and Bob will get exactly these correlations, but very clearly there is no security at all, this state being a separable state, Eve holds a copy of everything. And so the correct story goes like that. If E's power is limited by only by quantum physics, and Alice and Bob quantum systems are two-dimensional, so if you make an assumption about the dimension of the relevant Hilbert space dimension, then we can indeed apply the usual security proofs and extract a secret key. Important is to realize that this is not just a theorist attack. It's actually a much more practical attack than all the collective coherent attacks. It's a real threat to actual implementations of quantum key distribution known as side channels. We can understand that quite easily. For instance, if we would implement quantum cryptography this way, which by the way is done today by some people, where we have several lasers. These could even be single photon, perfect single photon sources that would not change the story. And each of them produces one of the four polarization states, then combined and sent to Bob. It's very easy to imagine that these four sources don't have exactly the same timing. Maybe one is slightly earlier than the other one. And then you have actually a second information additionally to the polarization, and Eve can take advantage of that. Another possibility would be that the wavelength of these sources is slightly different. Again, that would provide information to Eve, and this would not be secure, even if all the correlation observed by Alice and Bob are exactly the ones corresponding to singlets. This actually is very general. If you have one of these correlations that admits a local hidden variable model, that means you can write it that way, the standard decomposition into local variables, then you could always imagine that the complete quantum state between Alice, Bob, and Eve is of the following form. The instruction that go to Alice, the instruction that go to Bob, and a copy of these instructions in Eve's hand. And so this instruction is really the function that tells Alice what to output for a given input. And this is all local. So provided this correlation does not violate some Bell inequality or does admit some local model, there will never be security without an extra assumption about the Hilbert space dimension. So what can we do from this observation? Well, maybe the first thing we can do is to be very suspicious when people tell you that they have unconditional security proofs, because all these unconditional proofs rely on assumptions like Hilbert space dimensions. Now, the other thing we can do is to be very careful in checking the absence of side channels. And this is actually what all the people do in quantum cryptography. We check that we don't have side channels. But of course, we can always miss one. So there is always a danger of missing one. The other possibility is to invent new protocols, protocols in which this conditional probability violates some Bell inequality. And once we have one of these, at least we have a chance to get secure keys out of that, either by limiting Eve to be a quantum, but in arbitrary Hilbert spaces, or, and that's what I'm going to do now, is to analyze these new protocols assuming only no signaling. We know that quantum mechanics does not allow to signal faster than light. And here we can make the same, start the analysis from this no signaling assumption. This is actually very close, I think, to the initial Eckert's intuition, intuition which was also, I mean, stressed again by Myers and Lowe. And then the first paper that was really following this kind of idea, though with a story slightly different, was by Jonathan Bright, Lucian Hardy, and Adrian Kent. And the most recent work on that is in these papers. So, which is the... okay, now first thing, I want now to simplify a little bit. I want to stick to bit cases. So we assume now that A, B, X, and Y are only bits, only value 0 and 1. And in this case, having a correlation will admit a locally hidden variable model if and only if it satisfies this inequality. This inequality is actually equivalent to the well-known CHSH inequality. Maybe one point here, I'm not really assuming that the no signaling is due to space-like separation between Alice and Bob, as we would do for Bell tests, or to test the non-locality of nature. Here, we assume that the Alice and Bob's offices are private in order to have a chance to make cryptography. And this is the basis for assuming that there is no signaling possibility and no signaling possibility. Okay, I just said that this inequality is equivalent to the CHSH one, which is written here. It's equivalent precisely under the assumption of no signaling. And of course, you recognize the C, the H, S, H people here. Okay, so I said we have to invent a new protocol. So we're not going to try to prove security of BB84 because we already know it is impossible to prove security of BB84 without an assumption on the Hilbert space dimension. So we'll introduce another protocol, which we call the CHSH protocol. So we have here the equator of the Bloch sphere. And we're going to assume that for the input x equals 0, Alice is going to measure in that direction. For x equals 1 in the x direction, so this would be z and x, so Alice does the same as in BB84, but Bob chooses the settings corresponding to the CHSH inequality. So y equals 0 plus 45, y equals 1 minus 45. And they do that repeatedly, and then they do something which I call pseudo-sifting, which is equivalent to the sifting in BB84, but it's actually not the same. The idea here is that Alice is going to announce her X. So she's going to announce for each instance which input she has chosen. But of course, she announced that only once the result on Alice and Bob is already obtained. And then Bob, once he knows the value of X, he of course knows the value of Y. This is his own choice. He will change his B to this one. So it means that B will be changed whenever this product is 1. And this product will be 1 only if x and y are both equal to 1. So only in the case where they are actually anti-correlated, because they measure in almost opposite directions. This is drawn actually for the phi plus state, the state for which they have positive correlation when they measure in the same direction. Now we see that this is not really sifting because all bits are kept. It is noisy also in the ideal perfect case. And this sifting is really one way contrary to the BB84 sifting, which is a two-way protocol. So this is not a protocol that we want to prove security. We want to analyze. And for that, we need now to introduce Eve. And the idea is that Eve will also be described by one of these conditional probabilities with our Alice and Bob's bit and Eve's symbol. So Eve's symbol can be of arbitrary, coming from an arbitrary alphabet. For given X, Y, and Eve could also have different possible inputs. Now, of course, this global probability distribution should be such that if I compute the marginals over Eve, I will get back the correlation that Alice and Bob observe. Now, we also assume that Alice and Bob's offices are securely isolated, so they are private, in such a way that no information about X is available to Eve nor to Bob. So if I look at the marginal by summing over Alice's symbol, I will get something which will become independent of X. The X here, the input of Alice, has no influence on the statistics observed by Bob and Eve. And similarly, if I look, trace out or sum over Bob's symbol, the statistics observed by Alice and Eve will be independent from the Y. There is no Y here at the end. So this is the formulation of the no signaling assumption here. And now, once we have that, we'll have to go back to think about what are the possible distributions here, this PAB given XY. And actually, thanks to a paper by Jonathan Barrett and co-workers, we know this, the structure of this set of correlations. And actually, we can start from the well-known polytope of local correlation. So we know that all the local correlation form a polytope, and the facets of these polytopes should flow. Okay, it should be touching here, of course. The facet of this polytope correspond to Bell inequalities. And in this binary case, there's only the CHSH inequality. And the vertices here correspond to local deterministic correlation. And we all know in this room that quantum mechanics provides means to produce correlations that go outside from this polytope, so we can violate the CHSH Bell inequality. But now, if we don't restrict ourselves to quantum mechanics, but only to no signaling, so all possible no signaling correlation, we find more. We find actually one more vertex on top of each Bell inequality. So on top of each facet of the local polytope, we have exactly one and only one new vertex. And this one corresponds exactly to this correlation. The sum of Alice and Bob's bits is equal to the product of their inputs, where equality here is equality modulo 2. So this one would correspond to a violation of the Bell inequality by the maximal possible algebraic value. So this is Bell inequality. All these satisfy Bell inequality. All these violate. This is the, let's say, 2 square root of 2 in the standard units of CHSH. And that one goes up to 4. OK, now we're going to analyze the cases where Alice and Bob's correlation lie on this line. So they are isotropic. I mean, a more general analysis is also possible, but we'll restrict ourselves for simplicity to isotropic correlations. So this one would correspond to the singlet, typically. This one is already local. And this one here is not achievable by quantum mechanics, but can still be thought of if we go to this no signaling paradigm. Now we remind, so we are looking for a correlation now involving also Eve, which is such that it can be decomposed in this way. So this is always a correct equality. This is simply a Bayes' law. And so we see that actually what Eve is doing, Eve is distributing correlations labels by her symbols, E and Z. And each of these correlation must be somewhere in this no signaling polytope. And then she can weight this, she can give different possible weights to these different no signaling correlations. And now if you count the parameters in this case, in the binary case, the number of parameters is such that actually there is a unique decomposition. So if you know which correlation you want to achieve, I mean, for instance, the singlet one, there's a unique way of doing it. And typically, the idea would be that Eve will have sometimes to send this vertex, so this non-local box, and sometimes send some of the local boxes. So whenever she sends a local box, Eve will have quite some information about it. But whenever Eve sends the non-local box, she will have no information. And there is no way for Eve to only send local boxes, since the average should be non-local. The average should violate the CHSH inequality. So we can take examples. For instance, as I just said, if Eve sends this non-local box, which is often termed the Popescu-Rohrlich box, then Eve will have exactly zero mutual information with Bob. So Eve and Bob will be completely separated. So this is the monogamy of these PR boxes. Now, if Eve sends a local box, and for instance, among the local boxes, one is the box which always outputs zero. Whatever the input, the output is always zero. And in this case, Eve knows half of the information. Why is it only half? Because remember, Alice announces her input. If her input is zero, then Bob will keep his output. So he will keep the zero. So Eve will know that. But in the other half of the cases, Alice will announce x equal 1, and then Bob will flip his bit if and only if his own input is 1. Now, if the inputs are chosen randomly, then Eve will have no information at all on these cases. So Eve will, in half of the cases, have full information, and in half of the cases, have no information at all. Now, another example would be where Alice always outputs 0, and Bob always outputs the input. In this case, whenever Alice announces x equals 0, Eve has full information because Bob is going to flip his bit if and only if y is equal to 1. So he will actually always output a 0. But in the other half of the cases, when Alice announces a 1, Eve will know nothing. So we'll again have, on the average, Eve holds half a bit of information on Bob. Okay, and now if you go through the analysis in details, which I will not do here, you can really prove that the mutual information Alice-Bob is larger than the mutual information Eve-Bob over all this region here. So here you can really distill a secret key. Alice and Bob can distill a secret key secure against any possible no-signaling adversary. And since this region enters into the quantum regime, it enters into the correlations that can be distributed using quantum means, we have here a secure quantum key distribution, secure against all possible individual attacks by any post-quantum non-signaling Eve. I should maybe also emphasize that in all this work, we are always analyzing individual attacks, not the most general collective attacks. I'll come back to that in a moment. So for individual attacks, we have here security against non-signaling Eves, so in particular for all possible Eves, whatever the Hilbert space dimension is. We could also prove that whenever there is a violation of Bell inequality, we get a strictly positive intrinsic information. I don't think I want to elaborate on that, but this will be of interest for a specialist. And going to two-way secret key distillation, we could find protocols that go down almost to the Bell inequality threshold, but not quite. There is still a little part here which is unknown, so we don't know whether there is a protocol to distill secret keys here or whether this would be an example of bound information. Something else which comes also along with this analysis of the CHSH protocol is something which is Heisenberg uncertainty for non-signaling correlation. Now, if we denote Qx, the probability that A and B's symbol differ for given x. So they would differ after the pseudo sifting. And Eve's information, so the mutual Shannon information, Eve, Bob, again, for given X, will have the following. This mutual information for X equals 0 is equal to 1/2 the error rate for X equals 1. So the 1/2 is not so important. But what is nice here is that the information for one input is given by the error rate for the other output. Very similar to what we have in quantum mechanics, but remember, this is all derived without any Hilbert space here. It's only no signaling. And symmetrically, the information, the mutual information for X equal 1 is given by the error rate for X equal 0. So now we come to the next step. So once we have such a nice protocol and the security proofs independent of Hilbert space dimensions, why not immediately implement that? And the reason why we cannot implement that immediately is because with today's technology, there is simply no way to violate the CHSH inequality while avoiding the detection loophole. So we all know about the detection loophole. I don't know exactly the complete history about it, but I think Abner and also Philip Pearl were involved in the early days of this detection loophole. But now the detection loophole can be, one can argue with this fair sampling assumption that nature is maybe subtle but certainly not malicious, and that she's not tricking us. And consequently, the fair sampling assumption makes a lot of sense when we test nature. But very clearly, now if we want to test Eve, there is no reason to assume that she is fair. She will certainly not be fair. And so there is just no way to implement the CHSH protocol if we're not able to close a detection loophole. And I like this kind of remark very much because it actually means that now this detection loophole, which is actually usually considered as very fundamental or philosophical in nature, is now a problem for applied physics. If you want really to do QKD secure independently of Hilbert space dimensions, you need to be able to close the detection loophole with better detectors. So I'm sure there will be more money for people trying to close a detection loophole in the near future. So I'll come to some first conclusions and also adding here some references. So correlations that do not violate any Bell inequality cannot be distilled to a secret key without assumptions under Hilbert space dimension. I said that repeatedly. I think this is an important and new message. We also have that whenever we have correlation that violate Bell inequality, then there is always a positive intrinsic information. Well, I don't want to define here intrinsic information, but the idea is that such kind of correlations cannot be distributed without consuming secret bits. Now, in the case of the binary case, security is proven against individual attacks. And for more general attacks, you may look at this paper. Is it this one? Yeah, this one. No, it's probably not that one. Yeah, no, it is this one, sorry. This one, this paper by Luis Massanes and Andreas Winter, where they consider more general attacks, collective attacks. Yeah, so it must be wrong what I wrote here. Oh, no, sorry, this is the more general attacks, this one here. And I thought, yeah, it is this here. This is the most general attack. This is our paper. So what was I saying? Okay, this is just our result. Now, for larger alphabets, and this Heisenberg trade-off between information gain and disturbance, you have that in this paper. Okay, so here you have different kinds of papers, all very recent on this new approach to quantum cryptography, which is really directly connected to Bell inequalities and puts all this Bell inequality detection loophole in a new framework. The main conclusion, though, is that Bell inequality violation is the only possible criterion for secure key distribution without this assumption about the Hilbert space. And interestingly, this is also correct for all these entanglement witness. You have entanglement witnesses, and most of them will only work if you know the dimension of a Hilbert space. Actually, the only entanglement witness which are independent of the Hilbert space dimension are the Bell inequalities. So again, Bell inequality comes out in a in a distinguished form. And the intuition behind all that, maybe I should have started by that, but the intuition is very clear. If there is no violation of Bell inequality, there is a local model, and of course Eve could hold a copy of that local model. And it's only by violating Bell that we are sure that Eve cannot hold a copy of the complete information and give us chances for a secret key distillation. Okay, thank you very much for your attention. Too clear. Yeah, so the question is, why is quantum mechanics limited to violating CHSH by 2√2 and not going up to 4? Although 4 would be possible without signaling. I guess it's an excellent question. It's, of course, not the first time that this question comes out. There are partial answers connected to communication complexity and things like that, but I guess the short answer is no, I have not the slightest idea. And you? Okay.